Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And of course, with me, as she is always, the ridiculously dressed Drea Kaufman.
Hello. Wish y'all could see what I'm wearing, but...
Explain that to everybody so they don't think I'm being rude.
Yeah, he's not being crazy, guys. I have a t-shirt on. It's like a raglan pajama top that I have that has all of these defense against the dark arts spells on it. You know, like ridiculous. So he's actually not saying that I look ridiculous, but I am wearing...
No, Drea does not look ridiculous at all.
So. Not right now. There are days.
There are days for both of us, I think, when we've recorded and you're like... Oh, man. Yeah,
I'm like, I haven't showered in 3 days. Don't look.
Yeah, you know.
But Matthew,
we have faces
kind.
For podcasting. What can we say?
We were made for radio. No, it's funny you say that because one of my friends at work has a hard policy that he never comments on Wim's appearance because, you know, like... He just never makes a comment on their appearance, which I think is smart. But one of these days, I'm just tempted to wear the most ridiculous thing in the entire world and, like, just wait. Like, be like, how hard is it for you not to say anything about what I'm wearing? See if you can maintain your policy, even if I show up in a tutu with purple hair or something like that. Like,
you've made some interesting life choices today.
I think it would more be along the lines of like, are you feeling okay today? Why do you ask?
Did you wake up hungover or something?
Yeah, I'm really tempted to see to challenge this, but I need a reason. Like I need a better like motivator than just pushing his buttons. But
yeah, that's probably a good call since you work with other people other than just them, right? So.
Yeah, but they'd find it funny too. So, yeah. But with my luck, it would be like the worst day to look like a clown. So, anyway, this is completely unrelated to anything else that's going on. Surprise visit from Drea the Clown.
Well, surprise, we got a brand new iTunes review, which we're so thankful for. It says amazing, 5 stars. It's from GCU. T, and it says, I'm probably the biggest Harry Potter nerd that ever lived, and I just finished the 6th book. I love your show. And I say that because it love is spelled out with a lot of syllables. It's funny, interesting, crazy, cool, and so Harry Potter. The only thing better than your show is the Harry Potter books and movies. I'm 10 years old, and I love you, Matt and Drea. Bye.
Aww.
Isn't that great?
I was going to make some snarky comment about how you can't be the biggest Harry Potter nerd in the world, but you're 10, so you can be the biggest whatever nerd in the entire world that you want.
It's absolutely true. So we really appreciate you listening, too, and thank you so much for spending your time. Look, let me just put it this way. Somebody who's younger than probably most of our audience spent 5 minutes and gave us a really nice review, and we really appreciate that. So thank you so much for taking a couple minutes out and giving us a star rating review and letting us know what you thought. It means the world to Drea and I that you did that. So I'm going to encourage you, all the other listeners, go and do that as well. Give us a star rating and written review. Let us know what you think of the show. You'll hear it read on the show, no matter what you have to say. And, you know, if you're not an Apple user, you can also subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcasts. Heck, review us anywhere. Just let people know what you think of the show. You can also talk to us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, which, you know, use the hashtag OwlPost. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. There's thenerdparty.com. And maybe, just maybe, you would like to leave us an email. Send an email to Drea and I. So go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose OwlPost, and then we'll get that.
I will second that. A listener who is 1/7 of our combined age left a review. So I trust that everyone else can.
Thank you for reminding me just how old that I am. So, I'm having my top of the hill party this year. So I like to call it the top of the hill party. That's right, folks. So
that we made it party.
That's right. Looks like we made it. Well, I made it at least. Anyway, So we did make it to chapter 13, and I have to say this is a very unlucky chapter for everybody in it, because it's the detention with Dolores chapter, and I really have to say that, you know, it's not going great for Harry, because the moment that he gets to the dining hall that night, everybody has heard about his shouting match with Dolores, and nobody is keeping it hush-hush that they're whispering about Harry. In fact, they don't really seem to mind that he can hear them and all the nasty things they're saying about him.
I do really love, though, that this is chapter 13. I love that she made that one of the worst chapters in the book be the worst number. I appreciate the little slight there. But yeah, no one seems to care that Harry can hear them talking smack. And smack they did very loudly, which is just, this is just such a hard chapter for Harry. When we get to the end and when we start discussing what's kind of happening with his actual detention, because it takes kind of a while to get to that point in this chapter, I have some thoughts and feelings as to kind of how this chapter starts and how it ends, and I don't want to skip too far ahead. But it is just a really unfortunate start, and everyone seems exhausted. And the biggest thing she kind of paints here is just the sheer amount of homework that they have, which sounds exhausting.
I actually feel bad for, I mean, it's not just Harry, but it's like the entire Trinity here, because they can't even really have a conversation at dinner because everybody is doing this not so whispering whisper thing. And Hermione's just like, you know what? Let's just get out of here. And I feel bad for Ron because he had to leave his half-eaten apple pie behind.
That is really the biggest tragedy in the story.
It is. Like, I was actually really disturbed about leaving apple pie. Wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take the plate with you?
I know. There's got to be some way for you to take the food back with you. I mean, they have to be able to eat in the common room at times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have a friend who has a story about the fact that he got up to go to the bathroom when he was at a restaurant, and everybody at the table let the waiter clear his plates after he'd only taken like 3 bites, and what he describes as the world's best ribs, and it haunts him to this day. Ugh, and it was well over a decade ago. So I can't even imagine how upset Ron is that his apple pie had to be left behind.
I would be pretty upset. This is really interesting though, because we have a conversation with Ron and Hermione telling Harry what it was like when he returned last year, because Harry can't understand why people don't believe him and Dumbledore, and they allow him a little bit of perspective that he hasn't had at this point. And I thought this part was really interesting because, you know, this does help make sense then of the people that we have been seeing, like Seamus or others, where, you know, it's just not as cut and dry as you would think it is. Harry, us knowing Harry's perspective, it feels cut and dry, but when we put it in this context, like Hermione and Ron do for him, it's really not. And I think that she's really smart to make this point, because I think it helps Harry have a kernel of understanding that if he doesn't get here, it would have been harder for him to do some things that come later in the book.
Right. Agreed. It helps him have an understanding, and I think that's good in any situation, kind of for anyone, but in this situation, I think it's particularly helpful because he's so angry, but doesn't really, that he can't see what he normally sees, where he can usually sort of logically spell out a lot of this. He's not able to kind of do that for himself. So for them to understand his process well enough and how he sort of comprehends and works through things in order to provide him that thing that he's clearly missing, I mean, it just shows how close they are and how intuitive with each other they are. You know, they know what motivates each other. They know how they think. And that just kind of shows how deep that connection goes. And it is a really vital part of information that he needs to be able to kind of proceed on through the chapter in the book.
Well, and it's interesting too, because, you know, all three of them are having frustrations and they're all frustrated. And I also, you know, love that Hermione is very frustrated, as are Ron and Harry, with this whole defense against the dark arts debacle with Dolores as their teacher, and how frustrating it is for them that, you know, they're in their owl year and they're not actually getting to practice any magic. And she's like, what's Dumbledore playing at? And then, of course, they remember that, well, you know, she's here to, you know, spy on us, you know, and it almost devolves into a fight to where Harry's like, can we just do some homework? Like, what has Harry ever been like? Can we just do some homework?
Right. I mean, the only thing worse than that would be Ron saying, let's just do some homework.
Yeah. You know, it's bad if that, it, you know, it comes to that. And so, it's really difficult for them because everything is ramped up here. And I feel like, you know, we've talked about Harry being in the pressure cooker, but, you know, really Ron, Harry, and Hermione, and the entire school is kind of in one because everybody's on edge. You know, all the fifth years that we've spent all this time with now are under a lot of pressure this year. And then, of course, you know, we get all the homework that they've got. We get all the problems with, you know, a new teacher who's not going to teach them anything in their owl year. And then we've got all this other stuff that's happening about what's going on outside the ministry, what's going on outside in the wizarding world, pressing in on Hogwarts and creating all of this discord. And, you know, what's really interesting reading this book is how it feels really similar to today. You know, just all this political pressure everywhere on every side, creating this real ugly place to live. Like, this is not a pleasant experience for anyone. And normally Hogwarts had been a place for us to escape most of that. And yet this term, Hogwarts isn't that safe place anymore.
Right. Like,
everything that's wrong about what's going on in the wizarding world has come to roost at Hogwarts.
It's been a tough year already for everyone, and we're only, you know, what, like a week in. This chapter maybe spans a week worth of stuff, and it's already tough. And it'll be interesting as we kind of progress through the chapter and through all of this to see how it grows, but. You know, we have all of this homework, and I love by the end how they're like, it's just like, I just wish all the teachers would stop stressing how important all this is. Like, we get it, you know, but it is important, and they're just so frustrated with everything. And particularly once we get into the fact that, you know, Harry does have, you know, homework to do and all of this, detention, and that the detention is actually making the homework impossible to do, which is making him exhausted, which is likely to put him in more detention. I feel like that's a little bit again of her maybe personal diatribe on education and probably a little bit on punishment too, and how maybe, you know, all of that can be so cyclical. You know, once you kind of start down that path, it's really hard to stop spiraling into failure. You know, how often when you get behind, you just stay behind even more. And that's just very clearly the case for Harry in this chapter, is he's struggling to keep out of trouble and just do the minimum. There's no way he can feel successful in this case. So.
Well, and I think too, you know, there is a sense where it's slightly a special case here because, you know, normally the wizarding world isn't in an upheaval like it is now. And so this wouldn't be as a big a deal. But with everything that's going on, it does feel insurmountable for Harry for much of this book, for much of this chapter. And, I think it's very clear, too, when we get to the actual detention, you know, Dolores is relishing what she's doing to Harry, and loving it. And so I think, you know, it's really disturbing to see that. There is a, you know, a teacher who would, you know, love the idea of basically getting to torture students, because it brings her joy, which is just disgusting. So, you know, and on top of all that, George and Fred aren't helping because they are using first years as guinea pigs for their, you know, wizarding treats. And I love how Hermione, I love her way of confronting them to get them to stop. Or yeah. at least trying to get them to stop.
Talk about knowing their weakness, man. Like, threatening to tell their mom is perfect. That's exactly what she needed to say to be effective. Like, I love how it took her a second and she's like, well, I'll tell your mom. And they're like, oh. I love how she writes it that, like, they felt like this was below the belt. They felt like Hermione was hitting below the belt. And to some extent, maybe she is, but I mean, that she knows how to get it to work for her. She knows what she needs to say to make to get what she wants. And I actually kind of commend her for that, whether or not it was, you know, nice and appropriate. But,
you know, I don't know if it's inappropriate because obviously the twins are being careful, but Hermione does have a point that they could severely injure somebody by what they're doing, by them having a reaction that, you know, and the again, they're using first years and these kids aren't old enough to make this decision. You know, they're 11 years old and they have an older student asking them if they want to do something for them. It's just not a great plan. So, you know, Hermione probably is hitting a little bit below the belt in this one. I'm going to tell your mom. But she also knows how Mrs. Weasley would feel about this and how scared they would be of their mother finding out. So, you know, it all, I think it kind of evens out a little bit.
Yeah, to an extent, though, I sort of feel like, you know, they know Hermione. They trust Hermione. She's made a prefect and sort of an authority in the school. And if she's telling them to stop, there's a certain amount of that they should just honor and respect. I mean, there's challenging authority and then there's, you know, kind of being a dick to authority. But I feel like they're crossing that line and just kind of being rude for like ignoring her versus, you know, trying to come to a compromise. Cause I do feel like someone like Hermione could compromise if given the opportunity. But yeah, I feel like they're just kind of being jags in this, and they should have listened a little bit more, you know, and they are acting in a very, in a fairly selfish manner. Like they know that Ron's not going to say anything because that's their brother and Hermione is their friend and their younger sister, quote unquote. And they don't really seem to care how this is going to affect them or their titles. Doesn't really seem to care how it's going to affect the first years because they don't see a future for themselves at Hogwarts as they've expressed. So they sort of don't really care if anybody else has a future. So it's kind of selfish what they're doing because, I mean, they don't seem to understand that their actions are affecting someone else.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, I think, put it really well. They're just not thinking about those kids. You know, and again, that's where I think Hermione has the point that they could really harm one of these kids. And it's not intentional. They're not trying to hurt anybody, but they really could. And so, and Hermione's really in a role in this chapter because right after that, we also learn that Spew ain't dead.
This chapter for me, Hermione makes a great point here. And then with the Spew thing, I literally just facepalm the entire time. Like, it's such a bad idea. And I cannot believe that she cannot see that. And I cannot believe no one has stopped her. And I'm sort of disappointed in everyone they're trying, but no one's really trying that hard to stop her. And, oh, well, I do appreciate, though, that Ron makes it less sneaky. Her hat's being laid out. I appreciate that he, you know, uncovers them with garbage. So at least if the house elves pick it up, they know what it is versus Hermione trying to trick them. But, whew, it's hard to read.
You know what I really like about this is it is an an uncomfortable thing to read with Hermione, you know, here, the idea that she can't quite understand this. And what I think that we kind of see here is that Hermione has a sense of self-righteousness in what she thinks is correct, but that self-righteousness is something that has never been tested against actually talking to the people she's trying to help, and therefore she's going about this the wrong way, you know. And she's even talked to some of the house elves last year in the kitchens, and she is trying to tell them what it is that they want instead of actually actively listening and hearing what it is that they want. She's putting on them her ideas. And I think that Rowling has a very underhanded way of kind of reminding us that we can't just assume that just because we would want a thing, that another person would want a thing. And therefore, conversation is the key to making sure that we're actually on the same page. And Hermione is not willing to do that because it's not that Hermione doesn't have a clear sense of right and wrong. She does. But she's also not remembering that the impact of her actions are on other people who might not actually want that, you know? And so, yes, like the enslavement of house elves, the way that we had seen like the Malfoys treat Dobby is awful.
But it's different.
But yeah, you don't hear any house elves at Hogwarts complaining about the treatment because they live in a place that takes care of them and loves them, you know?
Right.
So I think there's this whole thing of context that Hermione has not been able to get with them. And so anyway, I just find that fascinating. But and I think it's important though, because otherwise I think Hermione would be too perfect of a character, and to give her this flaw, I think is important to show that she does have some blinders that, you know, maybe by the end of the series, those will have, you know, abated a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a good, I agree that it would have made Hermione too perfect of a character if we just sort of blindly accepted that. You know, she needs to have sort of something to overcome beyond being, you know, awkward and an appearance. It's nice that she's got a little bit more than that. But it still doesn't make it easy to read. It still makes it uncomfortable to read.
A lot of this chapter is kind of uncomfortable.
Well, poor Harry just can't seem to catch a break. He gets detention and then he gets all this homework and there's people talking about him. And the one thing that used to always make him happy was flying and playing Quidditch. And even that's sort of given him grief early on here, where Angelina gets real mad that he ends up with detention when there were supposed to be tryouts to replace Oliver Wood, who graduated. Should we say graduate?
Yeah,
from
he's
Hogwarts?
Graduated now and he's playing for, oh gosh, I think it's
some local team. It's one of the Quidditch
Pudmore
teams.
Or something.
Yeah. But I just didn't know if you graduated Hogwarts or how that worked, but we can go with graduated. So she rails into him when she finds out that he has gotten himself detention. And she's basically like, I don't care if you have to tell that woman that you were lying and making it all up, you will be there. And like, you can just tell the ridiculousness. And he's like, tell her I was lying. And, you know, it's not a good day, not a good week for Harry.
Although, you know, I do have to say I really enjoyed when they went to Care of Magical Creatures and we get introduced to Bo-Truckles for the first time, which was so fun.
Yeah, I forgot about that entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed that because I love seeing the things that she's pulled from this series and has been using in the Fantastic Beasts series. It brings me a lot of joy to see that. So I was like, oh yeah, I was just like you. I totally forgot. This is the first time that we meet them and we learn about what they are and what they do. But this is
and
also
they can
place
apparently gouge your eyes out.
Yeah. They have tempers. So luckily Pickett is a little bit more moody than he is, you know, like terrifying. So,
Yeah, he's more of a drama queen than he is a terrifying, bloodlusting stick monster.
Yes. But this is also where we get a confrontation with Malfoy, who's being a little turd the whole time, and talking about how, you know, Hagrid's probably got up to something that's too big for him, and he walks away, and Harry just kind of is feeling sick. Like, does he actually know something? Like, or is he just being a jerk? And then, of course, Malfoy is also mouthing off about how his father was talking out to the ministry, and how if, you know, he ever comes back, he's not sure he'll even have a place to stay here anymore. So we really get this picture, along with what we've been seeing with Dolores, is that the ministry has a much more heavy hand now in the goings on at Hogwarts. And it's kind of scary when you think about that, you know, that whole idea. I think, you know, we take usually what Malfoy says is kind of a throwaway, but you know, here it's like, it's not great. It's actually creepy.
In this case, I sort of feel like, so in the past, Malfoy's are always sort of flaunted his wealth as a status thing, like, oh, my daddy knows all these people and we have all this money and we get all these things. And now he's sort of flaunting the knowledge he has, but in a way that I feel like he's not supposed to do. And if daddy were there, would probably be pretty mad at him for sharing some of the things he shares or alluding to some of the things he's been alluding to. Because it's really giving insight as to how much Draco actually is aware of his dad's dealings. And kind of, you can't argue that he has any sort of like, oh, he's a child and is sheltered from this. You get this idea that maybe he's not so sheltered from this. And for me, it kind of makes me wonder, what actually is he experiencing as a kid? Because to experience some of that, even from that sort of dark and, if you want to say, evil side, like, that's traumatic for a kid. So there's a part of me that also feels a little bit sorry for him. That, yeah, he has all this information and he's a total D, but I feel bad that he has to be subjected to this in any way, shape, or form, you know? And it's kind of what Molly was fighting to protect the kids from. You know, no one's protecting Malfoy from this. No one's even trying to protect Malfoy from this. So it's just, it's really interesting and gives you, it actually makes me feel sorry for him a little bit, which it starts here. And I think, if I remember correctly, it will continue to grow. But, you know, I still hate that guy a lot, but there's a small little inkling there that maybe there's more going on and he's a little bit more of a complex character than we've been led to believe.
Yeah, which is nice. And I think you're absolutely right to call that out, that there are little glimpses that there might be something else in this book, and it'll definitely play out in the next book. I do feel bad for Harry in the sense that, oh, Luna, you love her, but she's like, oh, Harry, I believe you about him who and us not, must not be named being back and that you escaped. And Harry's like, oh, thank you.
Thanks, Luna.
Yeah. You know, she's wearing radishes, his earrings, and like everybody's making fun of her. And then, you know, I love that Harry, though, gets on Hermione because Hermione kind of starts making fun of her. And Harry's like, can you not offend the people who say they believe me? And she's like, this is another place where Hermione doesn't come off great. She's like, Ginny's told me all about her and how she doesn't believe anything except for what's in the Quibbler that her father, you know. And like, you, what is funny for the first time is you see a prejudice here in Hermione, which is she is prejudiced against people who don't think like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just shows, and I didn't take it as a prejudice, but I can totally see what you're saying. I took it as she's just very closed-minded. She's very much so like, my way is the right way, and my way is scientifically proven, and it's just what it is. And anybody who believes differently is a fool. And it's, you know, she kind of rails, and you never really, I'm always really sensitive to like woman on woman crime too, because I feel like it can get really catty and unnecessary. And I feel a little bit like we're getting a little bit of that. And the way she avoids it is, you know, Luna doesn't engage for the most part. She's just kind of like annoyed by it, but moves on, right? Doesn't like sort of lash out, but Hermione is definitely being catty
with her, and it's not a good color on her. She needs to just accept Luna and that she's going to think differently, and that it doesn't hurt Hermione for her to do that, and she can just move on. But I think that's along the same lines as, you know, her not accepting the house elves could feel differently than her. It's just another way that same kind of attitude is playing out.
It's interesting too, because it's one of those places where Hermione has taken, John Mills and I was talking about this on aggressive negotiations, this idea of there are capital T truths and then there are small t truths. And Hermione has made a lot of small t truths in her life, capital T truths. And that's where a misorientation of idea of what cannot be broken is wrong. And part of that has to do with the fact that she's just so set in that she's right because she's read all these books and all these things and has all this knowledge. But Hermione doesn't quite always have the wisdom about how to have that knowledge interact with the rest of the world that may not completely see the world the way that she does. And so, therefore, and she hasn't developed the ability to put herself into anybody else's shoes or truly listen just yet. And so that's where she is. And I think, again, it's a smart thing for Rowling to do, because I think the whole point of this is to kind of show that we all have our weaknesses and we need to learn from those weaknesses. And that's one of the reasons you have a trinity here with Ron, Harry, and Hermione, because they each have strengths that will help the other become stronger in those areas where they're not. And that's a really smart thing. What's really nice about this whole thing, though, is that Ernie McMillan comes up to Harry and he's like, you know what? I just want you to know that it's not only weirdos who support you. I believe you 100% and my family does, and we stand behind you and Dumbledore. And it's one of those moments where it's just like when you're reading this chapter and you're going through this emotional turmoil, you get to that point and you're kind of like Harry where you're like, I'm going to burst into tears. That's the nicest thing I've heard all day. And like even Harry, he's totally taken aback. And he's like, yeah, he can be kind of pompous, but there's a deep rooted appreciation for this vote of confidence in somebody who's not, you know, wearing radishes in their ears that gives Harry a sense of like, I think it's the first time in the last few weeks at school where there's a little bit of joy planted in Harry's life. Like, I'm not the only one. Ron and Hermione aren't the only ones who believe me. There are other people with me too. And I think that's a really nice little nugget for her to throw in here, because otherwise this chapter would be pretty bleak.
I do appreciate him speaking up, and it had to be brave. And I do like that she even sort of points out the fact that Seamus is kind of not sure what to say now, right? That Ernie even just speaks up and is like, I believe you, and we believe Dumbledore, and this is, and like, very factual. And, you know, it's kind of nice that happens, and it's kind of nice that Seamus sees someone who's not in the Trinity per se speaking up and saying, I believe you, because I think that's important. So it is a nice little touch, and she has a very nice way of like taking you to the point of no return and no hope, and then just giving you a little bit of hope, bring you back from the edge a little bit. She pushes you there and then she brings you back a little bit. She's got this nice little balance between making you feel it but not have to like sulk in it for long periods of time. So it's nice.
Well, and it's nice that happens there, because the rest of this chapter with the detention is quite awful.
Oh, yeah. And it's like the worst.
Yeah. And I think this, you know, Harry does ask her if he can, you know, can I do detention another day instead of Friday? Can I do, you know, maybe, you know, he's basically saying, I'll do more detentions, you know, just... and she's like, oh no, yeah, I think this will really teach you the lesson that you need to learn. Like, she's just, everything about her makes you want to smack her in the face, because she's just so loving being evil to this child. And
to an extent, though, before we go too much further, I do agree with that principle overall, that a punishment should inflict consequences. Now, whether one, the punishment fits quote unquote crime, and two, whether what he actually said warranted punishment is a completely different story. However, the theory that him missing out on something that he actually wanted as a good side effect to the punishment, I agree with. Like, what punishment is it if I tell you no TV for a week, but I let you watch your favorite thing on TV and then just start the week later? Like, are you actually going to learn? Right? Like, are you actually learning from the consequences of your actions? But in this case, I don't think his actions warranted a punishment, and definitely not the punishment that he gets.
No, I heartily agree with you. I think you're absolutely right, because there is a semblance of truth into what she says. But then the way she goes about it is just utterly awful. I mean, it's just proper rotten what she's doing to this child. And she is inflicting physical torture on somebody and gaining pleasure from it. Like, every time he goes to the tension, she, at the end, she's like, oh, ooh, that, you know, the first time, oh, that hasn't really set in. Well, we'll work on that tomorrow. And then, of course, he goes back the next day and it gets deeper and deeper into his hand. Like, he talked that, you know, she mentions in the other detentions how he'll be writing and there's like blood pouring down his hand onto his parchment. It's just, it's so disturbing, the sense of sadism that this person has towards these children. And you can just really get the sense here that she hates these kids.
It's just horrible. It I just can't even believe that this punishment thing is real. And I mean, Ron and Hermione both sort of freak out when they actually ultimately end up seeing it. But like, I agree, it's so cruel. But there was still a part of me that loved and was so proud of Harry for not letting her see that she was getting to him, for staying strong and silent in what can only be excruciating circumstances. I still got to commend him for his utter strength and the fact that he was able to control his temper this time around, and that he is heeding what McGonagall said. You know, those are all incredibly important things that are, you know, he is being strong, and it sucks that he has to, but I was reading it and I was like, I'm so proud of Harry in this moment.
I completely agree. I just love that he will not let her win. He's not going to complain to his friends about it. He's not going to tell anybody about it. And, you know, I love that Ron finds out and how he's like, you need to tell Dumbledore. You need to tell, you know, McGonagall. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And there's a moment where Harry is like, I never thought this possible, but I think she might be worse than Snape.
I mean, I love how strong he is, but at the same time, I really do feel like this is the thing for me that I can relate to Harry a lot, is he is internalizing a lot of this more so than he should. And he is taking it upon himself to be so strong and not ask for help and not let anybody else deal with, and that his problems are very unimportant. That alone is a relatable characteristic for me personally, kind of feeling that way at times too. And at the same time, I want to shout to him, like, this is a big deal. Like, it is really okay that you tell someone this. The teachers you would tell are smart enough to know how to do this. They're not just going to run and tattle on her. They're not, you know what I mean? Like, they need to have this information as part of their decision-making process. And there's a part of me that wishes he understood that, but can totally relate on why he doesn't act upon it.
No, I think you have a really good point, in the sense that this is one of those places where Harry starts to internalize in this book a lot of things that he should be talking about.
Yeah.
And it is going to continue to build throughout the rest of the book until a moment where it does completely just explode all over the place. It's going to be interesting to watch that happen. And again, it's a really important journey for Harry to go on. And I also really like that, you know, in the same moment where Ron finds out about the hand, he had just finished telling Harry about how he's been practicing because he wants to try out for Gryffindor's keeper. And he's afraid, you know, that Harry might look down on him. He's like, no, man, that's awesome. I'd love to have you on the team. And like, there's this moment where Harry goes from being like morose about what's been happening to him to be completely like supportive of his friend. And it's just another moment where you're like really proud of Harry, where he's like, he would love to have his best friend on the team. Like, of course I want you there.
Right. I feel like it's a moment where I wasn't necessarily proud of Harry, but it was just one more moment where we give Harry something, right? Like, of course he wants to spend more time with his best friend. Like, his best friend wants to do something that he has loved for a long time. Like, that's awesome. And I love that we get that, and that Harry gets this kind of uplifting moment of like, you might actually get to spend a lot of this time that you've had to spend away from Ron and Hermione. You might actually get to spend some of it with Ron now, because Ron has an interest in that. And I do think it's really interesting that they sort of paint the Weasleys as sort of being naturally gifted at Quidditch, which will definitely become a thing in the future. And I like that that's, you know, that's a thing. Like, we haven't really given the Weasley family anything for their family legacy, if you will, beyond sort of just being really awesome people, which is a great thing to have. But we've never really gotten any sort of idea, like, the Malfoys are rich and, you know, Harry's family's been naturally talented and this and that. And now we kind of learn that the Weasley family is sort of regarded as having a knack for Quidditch, which is a nice little, it's a neat little piece of information we're given.
Yeah, no, I liked that too. And, you know, he does end up making the team, and you know, Angelina tells Harry, you know, he's not the best, but he's not the worst, and I think he could really grow into it. And the fact that, like you were saying, she even mentions he comes from a great Quidditch family, and I think he's going to be good. So, you know, if you help him out and we all help him out, I think he's going to be a great keeper. And I kind of liked that too, is like, I loved the way that Angelina made the decision about this, because she, there were other people that were better than him, but they were going to be real annoying people to have on the team. And so she made the decision based off of what's best for the team as a whole, not just as the position. And it's so true, like, when it comes to sports, like, a certain personality can completely destroy a team. And so I appreciated that she has the wherewithal to understand this idea and choose somebody who's going to be the best in every way for the team, not just in one area. That showed a lot of maturity on Angelina's part, I thought.
Yeah, it's, that's actually something that a lot of just in general teams need to understand, be it a work team or whatnot, like, fit and how something fits into a team is more important as to whether that's necessarily like the number one best and most qualified person for that job. Like, the fit and how they interact with the other members of the team and how willing they are to learn and take criticism is way more important than their ability to actually do whatever it is that they're doing. And too often, I think, even in the corporate world, we forget that. And we forget that, hey, you need to be able to see how well this person's going to get along with everyone else you have. Otherwise, you're just going to make everyone's lives unpleasant. And that is going to ultimately affect their ability to do whatever it is you need them to do. And for her to be able to see that and have faith that he can do that, and even have faith in Harry that he can kind of coach him up, says a lot. And it shows that she was a great choice for head of the Quidditch team, and that she's doing the right thing. I also do like in this moment that she apologizes to Harry for sort of biting his head off about detention. And she's like, I was just really stressed. Basically is what she says, like, I was just stressed. I know it's not your fault. It's all right. And I sort of feel like that's her way of saying, like, I believe you, and like, I believe you, but let's just move on. Because if she didn't believe him, she'd still be angry. So, you know, we're just, by the end of this chapter, we're just getting more and more sort of momentum for Harry, and he's getting little wins, and people are feeling more willing to sort of step up for him, which I really like.
Well, and there's this interesting moment because he's talking to Hermione, and they're talking about, you know, it's, you know, great that he made the team. And then he said, something weird happened to me in Umbridge's office. She touched me and my scar really hurt. And he's like, do you think maybe, you know, she could be controlled like Quirrell? And they realize, okay, that's probably not the way it is because of, you know, Voldemort being back, but maybe it's under the Imperius curse. And she's like, I think you should really talk to Dumbledore about this. And he's like, Dumbledore doesn't need to hear about this. I'll write Sirius. And then she's like, don't write Sirius. You can't put that in a letter. And he's like,
can't do that either.
He's like, fine. You know what? I'm going to bed.
Which is totally what I'd say. You know what? Fine. I'm just going to go to sleep. I'll deal with this later.
But I thought that was interesting because we get this moment where, you know, Harry's scar has been burning a lot and bothering him a lot throughout the book. And we have this moment that does remind us of the first book. And I thought it was, you know, obviously Harry putting those pieces together and wanting to talk about it with somebody. But there is this disconnect at the moment right now between his trust in Dumbledore and his feeling like he can go to him with these things. And
well, and his reaction about that is both sort of based in logic. And one of the first times that Harry's sort of allowing maybe an emotional response to eclipse his logical thinking, which we don't have in other books, he's just angry at Dumbledore. He's bitter and resentful and holding things against him. So it breaks that trust and that relationship they built, which is very common for a teenager to do to their parents. So he's having this very paternal reaction. And but at the same time, if you stopped and thought about it, instead of trusting that Dumbledore is taking care of him, he's just getting angry and bitter about it, which is totally an emotional reaction, which he never acts on. So it's very new for him and he doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I think I really like the way that you put that because I think that it's very much something that doesn't have any logical explanation to it. Harry can't even, he doesn't even realize he's doing it, the pushing Dumbledore away and why he's doing it. It is just happening.
Right.
Every time somebody mentions his name.
Yeah, and there's a part of him that because it's not logic-based and he can't explain it to Ron or Hermione. So when he, you know, when he says something and they say like, oh, go to Dumbledore, and he's like, I'm not going to do that. He doesn't know why. He can't explain to them why. So he kind of is cutting them out too because from this emotional standpoint, they're also part of this problem, right? Like he can't explain it and they're going to ask him and he doesn't have an answer. So I don't even want to open that can of worms so that I have to answer it. It's this very like childlike, almost primitive response to things that Harry has never really dealt with, at least from our point of view or the reader's point of view.
Yeah, no, it's a tough chapter. I mean, it's just been a very difficult few weeks at Hogwarts for Harry. It has not gone well, and it will continue to not go well. As we move into the next few chapters, some very big shakeups are going to happen. So yeah, as we look to get to that, Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you, and maybe we have good things to talk about there on Twitter, where can people find you?
Yeah, if you want to pull yourself out of the doom and gloom and talk about something else, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd and Tumblr under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. I do a couple of shows over on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I do a show called The 602 Club with my friend Christy. And that's where we're just talking about all the fandoms we love. It's so much fun. We just actually did the Lego movie as we're getting ready for the Lego movie too. So make sure you're checking it out. It's a blast every week. And then last but not least, I do a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.